This is an oral history interview with Dudley Rosewell at his home in Somerset West, and it's the 9th of September 2011.
Thank you. So you have been to Gough, Marion and Sinai.
Right.
Okay, and what were your team members?
Oh, it's at Marion 33, Gough 18 and Sinai 15.
Okay. Which years were those?
It was 1972 at Gough Island, 1973-74 at the Antarctic, and 1976-77 at Marion Island.
Okay, great. So you went to Gough Island first?
Yeah.
And how did it happen that you went?
Well, I was in the Weather Bureau, and I was looking for adventure. And I'd been on the weather ships, and my colleague said, you know, do you know about the island? And I applied and accepted.
Great, so you were the meteorologist.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you know anything about the islands or the Antarctic before you went?
Nothing. I knew nothing. My folks didn't know anything. It was a surprise.
When you heard the word island, what exactly did you think?
Well, I thought it was just a manned base. I'd heard a bit about it from the guys at the office who had also been down to different remote places, and I was just looking for adventure.
The team preparations for Gough Island specifically, what exactly did that entail?
We were put together for a training session in Pretoria. We did cookery, we did firefighting, first aid. And then we also had time at the Weather Bureau Upper Air Station where we learned a bit of the work that was needed on Gough Island, which I actually knew already from my work in the Weather Service.
Okay. And how did that differ from your preparation for Sinai and for Marion?
Well, it was my first one, so the cooking was a new venture, and firefighting I'd never done. But generally, for the Antarctic, I didn't go through much preparation at all because it was straight from Gough Island.
Mm.
And it was very easy going.
Okay. So there wasn't any real difference?
No.
So you went for the cooking lessons at the
Department of Food Technology,
yes.
I think, in Pretoria.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they also sent you there.
Yeah. I've actually got a photo of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Was in the newspaper of Pretoria.
Did you have to make any preparations specifically for your job as meteorologist on any of these places?
For Marion Island, I was a senior met technician, and they did grill me a bit more. I had to have the responsibility, know the work properly, and I was just, I also had experience on Gough Island and the Antarctic before I went to Marion, so I had lots of experience, and I was quite well prepared.
Okay, and the equipment that you used was sort of similar at all the bases?
No, well, we had new upper air equipment on Marion, which we didn't have on the other two, and we got training on that before we went in Pretoria, Irene.
Yes. Now, the journey there, you said you went down on the RSA.
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, it was a great trip. You know, you going to Gough, you stay above the frontal systems, and it was quite easy going.
Mm.
And, of course, first day I always got sick, so, you know, you... And then you acclimatise, and it was great sailing. It took about 4 days, and I love the adventure and the challenge.
And the journeys down to the Antarctic and to Marion?
Yeah, well, the Antarctic was a 12-day trip, and it was far more sort of different. Because you go through the Roaring Forties and the Furious Fifties, you hit the ice, and you've got the rendezvous with icebergs and trying to find a book to dock the ship. And you also get initiated and 66 degrees south when you cross it.
King Neptune.
Yeah, so you're well initiated going down to the Antarctic, but yeah, it's got that special remembrance, you know, of going to the Antarctic. And Marianne, which is 47 degrees south, we hit some very bad weather going to Marianne, and we nearly went in reverse at some stages. It was really hard going.
Yeah, but by that time, I'm sure you were familiar with the ship.
Yes, yes. Now, I knew the old RSA, rolling slowly along.
And on all the three journeys, were the captain, the first mate, was, you said it was McNish, captain?
McNish was the captain of the Gough and the Antarctic, and then Captain Funk took over for Marianne.
What were those two like?
They were in charge of the ship, and you got to know them, and you were allowed to a free run of the whole ship. We used to be up the masts and all over the place. It was great. You make what you want to make of it, and of course. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. We've heard lots of interesting stories about Funk, about how when the ships arrive at Marianne, people have to get on the dinghies as well, and how you sort of say jump.
When I say jump, you jump.
That's the one.
Yeah. And he could swear nicely too. He used the F word quite a lot. And when we actually came into harbour coming back from Marianne Island, he shouted a command to the engine room to full reverse to broadside next to the quay, and the guy went full ahead, and the ship banged into the quay. So that was a memorable thing with old Captain Funk, and he went hysterical, you know. So,
on the journey down to go off to Marianne and sign up, what did you do?
You generally try and acclimatize to the ship, because you've got to get used to it. It has a twist in it, and you get sick, and you spend quite a bit of time in the first day or two on your bunk, and then you get out and you start going to the smoke hole, which is buy some drinks, and you chat and drink, and if the weather's nice, we sat on the hatches and tanned on the hatches. Yeah, so you just keep yourself busy. We even did some skipping and that on the heli deck of the ship. Yeah.
So did you have much interaction with the crew or not really?
Maybe the first mate and the dining room staff and the captain you generally have a good sort of connection to. But going down to Gough Island, we took a bull down on the heli deck.
A bull?
Which was for Tristan da Cunha.
Oh my goodness.
So that was one passenger which you don't normally take down.
Did anything interesting happen on any of the journeys down, can you call? Like the bull, anything else?
Well, we brought penguins back. The department had a quota of penguins they could bring back, and we brought back penguins from Gough Island, a whole lot of rockhoppers. From the Antarctic, we brought back all our huskies. We were supposed to clear out all the huskies from the Antarctic, but some still sneaked back. But generally, it was, you know, looking forward to seeing that Table Mountain again and family and that.
Were the penguins for the zoos?
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense. Tell me a bit about Tristan Island.
Well, we from our trip down, we got to know a few of the people who were going to do a contract period on Tristan. Okay. So we knew the doctor and the padre. Mm. And during a takeover period, we actually went to Tristan, and because they have a hold for Tristan as well as for Gough. And so the hold was all their possession. Food and all their clothing and everything that was sent down, because they worked on mail orders from Tristan. And we stayed at the doctor's place, and very interesting culture on Tristan of about 7 families and intermixing. And we went up on top of the volcano that erupted in 61, and it's still smoldering and warm with sulfur fumes coming out. We went to the potato patches where the women normally work while the men do the crayfish catching. And it was very interesting. I actually took some nice photos of how they lived there and spin their own wool, and they all wear a similar type clothing because they get the same mail orders, you know. And it was a plum color, which was in fashion in 1972, and I'll never forget it.
How many days did you spend on Tristan?
About 3 or 4.
Okay. Did you interact much with the locals?
Yes, we walked around and we saw Mr. Plot, the policeman, and we saw the administrator, and we went and saw the padre. Because his daughter was going to come back to South Africa, but another girl was going back to England because they've got ties with England as well because it's a British island.
Mm.
So we interacted with a lot of people. Yeah, it was very interesting.
And now tell me, what were your first thoughts on arriving at Gough, at Marian and Sinai? Let's start with Gough.
It was just a huge adventure. I looked forward from the start in any way I could enjoy myself and make the most of it. That was my whole idea of going down, to make the most of it. And alright, you make a bit of money, which is nice, and you get all your clothes and your chocolates and your booze and cigarettes. If you don't smoke, you get it into film money. And I just bought a camera, so I was keen to start some photography. You're away from family, away from girlfriends. You're just going, doing your thing. And it was a great break, because I had originally just been in the Air Force for 11 months. So it was nice to break away from South Africa.
Great. And when you saw the ice for the first time, what did you think?
The ice. That was great. You know, I really enjoyed it. It was something different, and I just got into the system of being on ice. You know, you got to just adjust yourself. Mm-hmm. That's all you got to do. And we had one chap who, stepping onto the ice, wanted to go home again because he thought he couldn't take it. But he couldn't go home because he was the only guy with Morse code. So, you know, but I really enjoyed it.
And Marian, I'm sure by that time you'd heard a lot about Marian.
Marian, it was actually a bit depressing.
Oh?
Because it's not such a nice island.
Oh,
It is, we measured 330 days of rain. It had 3,000 millimeters, and it's generally cloudy and cold. Compared to Gough, Gough was a gorgeous island, as my mother-in-law would say.
So you preferred Gough?
Gough was beautiful. But the Antarctic was unique.
Mm.
You know, it was really unique.
Did you spend a lot of time with the outgoing teams?
Well, I knew some of the chaps who were on the other team. And you don't really spend much time because it's sort of very sort of tense time when you have takeover period.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of friction between teams and what the old team is, the macho guys who know everything, and you are the pleb who comes in, and you've got to listen by their sort of standards until they're gone and you have your own standards.
Yeah.
There was quite a bit of friction. I remember on Marian Island, just with the Public Works Department, the guy wanted to sort me out because I was cooking that day, and I made sort of savory tarts. And he said that there's less bacon and cheese on their savoury tart than on the other one. And he wanted to have a fight over this. You know, the tension is so...
Wow. Tangible. Yeah.
During takeover period, guys away from their wives for a period, these are the public works department, and the other team wants to get home, and they're just tired of being on the island. So there are some tense times.
And so this is the same for all three places?
I didn't find it so much on Gough Island.
Okay.
Maybe because we spent the time off Gough going to Tristan during takeover period.
Ah, I see.
And at the Antarctic, there was also, you're closely confined in that base. And we were in an old base, so it was under 8 meters of snow. So you're in confined areas.
That would have been Sanite 2 then?
I'm not quite sure.
Yes, no, it would have been.
Sanite 2, yeah. I think so. Because we could still go into the old base.
The first Sanai 1, yes. Yeah. No, because if I recall that Sanai 3 was built in the early 80s.
Oh, that was a round. Was it the round one?
I think so. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously the new one was built in the 90s.
Yeah.
Good. Now, the outgoing teams, what sort of kind of things would they tell you? Did they give you advice? Did they leave you instructions?
No, they didn't leave much at all because... They were going home. They you could see they didn't care what they looked like, and they wore their jersey that they'd worn the whole year. And it was in the base. It they looked like rogues, sort of tramps type thing, and with their long hair. And everybody grows their hair when they're down there. But there wasn't that much interaction. They might just sit behind and watch films all the time because we got a lot of full-length films which one could put on the projector. And
Would those be the 16mm?
Yeah.
Can you remember the names of the films? Just for interest.
I actually got them in my diary, how many times I used to see them.
Oh, really? Oh, good. No, we'll definitely take a look at those. Brilliant. And you say this is pretty much the same for all three places.
Yeah. Yeah. On the Gough Island, you didn't get so many films as the Antarctic because you weren't so many people. We were only 7 at Gough. We were 24 on the Antarctic, but 8 went into the field.
For the geologists.
Yeah, the geologists, land surveyor, and mechanic.
Now, describe a life in the day of a meteorologist on these three places.
Well, you get up at 11 o'clock in the morning. This is... at the Antarctic, because there's no day and night there. You're in the base. You don't know when it's day and when it's night unless you look at a watch. And you get up at 11 o'clock and you have like breakfast, lunch. And if you're on skivvy duty, then you've got to go and fill the snow smelter and do some cleaning up in the base and kitchen. And then you get into work, you do 3 hourly readings, and then somebody is responsible for supper because you have a cooking turn, and then the skivvy also cleans up the kitchen after the guy's cooking turn, and then you sort of get into evening mode, or you're playing darts or snooker, or there's chance for a party. If there's something to celebrate, you celebrate it. And if the weather's nice, you go out run with the huskies. We often went for run with the huskies behind a sledge, a dog sledge. Yeah, you keep yourself busy. Some guys just play the guitar, and then in the evening you might watch a film after the supper. Or you go and play snooker or go into your room. And then you've got your balloon ascent around midnight.
Okay.
And you do the balloon ascent, and then you go and have a snack in the kitchen afterwards. Open a tin of Viennas or something for a snack. And then you go to bed at about 3 o'clock. That's the normal routine of a day. But getting back to these Viennas... the guys used to change the labels on the tins. so that you didn't think, you didn't know it was Viennas. They put like peas on a Vienna tin so that the Viennas wouldn't get eaten, and the, you know.
They would
so,
be the only ones.
Yeah,
knowing.
They would know. But these things got done. You bartered your mixes and beers for skivvy turns and cooking turns, because you didn't. Money was useless down there, and this used to carry on all the time.
Correct. Yeah. And the other bases.
The other bases, because you had light at normal times and you were on top of the ground, you normally. On Marion and Gough, we had more regular readings and two balloon ascents a day. And we also used to congregate in the kitchens a lot and drink coffee and make nice bread and sometimes play table tennis, we'll go for long walks. We did a lot of walking. Marion and I walked around the island once. And you often go and look at the birds, lots of bird life down on the coast, Kildalki, a lot of birds down there. And Tony Williams was doing a lot of research on the king penguins, and I used to pop down to his little beach where he had his, was a plastic water tank, which he converted into a house. And go and visit him down there, or yeah, just go for a walk if the weather permitted. Otherwise, you played snooker and darts in the base.
So, sort of the more social activities, or the after-hour activities, would have been a more social interaction between the teams rather than just.
Yeah, you don't normally do things on your own. You sort of go as a group, and it's safer too.
Yeah, and did you also have the thing of having dinner each evening, the team together?
Yeah.
At all three bases.
Yeah, yeah. You had the evening meal was together, and because you had a cook who had to prepare it,
yes,
and normally have it prepared by a certain time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now tell me, what are the challenges of living on these remote places?
The biggest challenge is getting on with your colleagues. Mm. If you don't get on with your colleagues, then you've got a problem. That is the biggest. You've got to understand the other's point of view, and everybody's got their own culture, and you've got to recognize that and try and accept what they like or where they've come from.
Yeah, so I can well imagine, especially being in such a confined place.
There was quite a big rift between English and Afrikaans.
Really?
At that time, yeah.
Oh, wait, and at all three places, or what?
Yeah.
Really? My goodness.
Yeah.
So how did you manage to overcome it, or did you just sort of walk around, it?
No, you accept, you just accept who they are, and, well, I'm very easy, I can get on quite easily, but some couldn't. We had this one guy who was quite religious. He used to play his Chai Kursen on a Sunday morning. Riflin, you know, because. And, yeah, and we would. Mike and I, we were quite English, and we used to try and get in earlier than him and put in this rock band from Woodstock and put that on. Just to.
Huh? Now I'm guessing Jimi Hendrix?
It wasn't Jimi Hendrix, it was 10 years after.
Okay.
The what? It was before your time too, but it was quite a noisy band. And this guy wanted this, you know, it was those days when Sunday was a very subdued day and you had to...
And this was where, Sana?
No, Gough Island.
Ah, I see.
At Sanaa, it was far more, very easy going. There wasn't any sort of domination or anything, but the groups formed of cultural backgrounds.
I suppose it's bound to happen.
Yeah, and Marion was also similar.
Yeah. Interaction.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other challenges? You said that's the biggest challenge, but.
Okay, there is the work, no, not so much the work challenge. Okay, I was senior on Marion Island and I had the challenge to try and motivate my technician to do his work and to be more responsible for his own work. And also I had to do a lot of the radio skits because the radio operator wasn't able to due to his drink problem.
How do you keep motivated doing each day and every day? How do you keep motivated?
Well,
you continue doing your work in these remote places with no one.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's a very difficult question to ask. Okay, I do have my religion behind me, and I was continuously sort of with thoughts of somebody looking after me all the time, and that got me through a lot, and gave me the wisdom to understand all these things.
Now, what made living on these places worthwhile?
Adventure. Yeah, it was really a great adventure. And that's all I went for, is the sort of adventure of a different life, people, and bird life. And, you know, it was just something else which somebody in South Africa wouldn't be able to experience.
Now, did you, especially on Gough and on Marion, did you have a lot of interaction with the animals? Interesting animal.
I used to go and walk around and enjoy the animals and bird life a lot and photograph them. And yeah, I didn't do any sort of research into them, but I enjoyed the animals a lot. And I enjoyed killing mice.
Oh, did you? How did you go about doing that?
With mouse traps. You know, Gough was really a problem with mice.
Mm.
And we used to set up mouse traps all over the place using bacon. And they used to actually gnaw through our insulated panels between
really?
The rooms. Yeah. Everything had to be kept in a tin with a sealed lid.
Yes.
Otherwise, the mice would be in. Yeah, it was really a bad situation.
And did you have the same problem on Marion?
I don't know if we had to, no, not really. No, we didn't.
Okay, and did you see a lot of the cats on Marion Island?
No, you didn't. Don't see them.
Okay, they're
in the black lava most of the time. I think I've got one slide of a cat,
but it's
in the wild.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they weren't...
They weren't visible.
Yeah, okay. So even walking around,
yeah.
You were lucky if you saw one.
Yeah.
But did you see evidence of them?
Well, you saw lots of dead night birds, the prions and the shearwaters, a lot of skeletons lying around.
So did anyone in your team ever just shoot the cats or work with the cats, or was that mostly what Martin did?
No.
Okay.
No, well, Martin had his... Well, there was another guy, what was his name, blonde hair, he used to run marathons. He's now at Nature Conservation. Sometimes you would go for, you know, a walk with them, and they would look for the cats and set their cages up, and you'd go and see what their work was about. Like, I used to go with the ornithologists and weighing of the different birds, the albatrosses and the penguins, and go onto the ledges.
Mm.
It was interesting to go and see how their work worked.
Yeah, on Marion specifically.
Yeah.
And on Gough Island, did you get an opportunity to go out with the other researchers as well? Or
there weren't researchers.
Okay.
There weren't any researchers. Only during our takeover period, Neil Farrell and two other chaps came onto the island during the takeover, and they did a sort of a survey of what animals and birds were on the island.
Okay, so when you walked around on Gough specifically, it was just for your own curiosity and adventure?
Yeah, yeah. And you enjoy the animals and birds, because we only had rockhopper penguins on Gough, and we didn't have so many of the albatrosses. We had the sooty and the yellow-nosed, and then wandering on top of the mountains. we didn't have the wandering at the near the base because of the difference in climate.
Okay. Did you ever spend a night outside on Gough in a tent?
Yeah. Yeah, quite a few times we went out, yeah. Especially when we went to the old base.
Mm. And the Hudson Marin also?
Yeah, we went. Yeah, I'll never forget our first night, morning breakfast. I went round with a few other chaps and we had curry for breakfast. And I'll never forget that.
So you did actually walk around the island?
Yeah.
Great. That's fantastic. What was that like? Seeing the different sides of the island.
It was amazingly different types of topography, and because you go past Boulder, I can't remember all the names of the areas. But
the beach archway.
Yeah, right on the other side of the island, there's also where the little volcanic cone is.
It's not Bullard.
There's also that very rocky area which you have to clamber across for quite a long period. I'd have to get out.
Santa Rosa, no? Devil's Footprint, Santa Rosa? No, that's where the black lava is.
Santa Rosa, I remember that too. I'll have to
But it's, we can go look it up. The teammates and the team dynamics for the different teams, how did that work? You sort of talked a little bit about that, about the split between the Afrikaans, more Afrikaans guys and English guys.
Yeah, no, there was definite breakup. And groups forming of guys with similar background.
And
especially on Sinai, where we were a number of people in the base. Mm-hmm. And guys tend to do this.
And did the tension ever erupt? Was there sort of interpersonal fights between
there
the
was, There was fist throwing.
Really? Where was this on Sinai specifically?
It's also when people can't handle a drink or they get aggressive after drink and they lay into other people or they take it out on furniture with axes.
Where was this?
We went just ask Dirk van Schalkwyk about Sinai 15. Anyway, so and then somebody fumigated the base with Sinai base. And we had to evacuate.
Why?
Because you couldn't breathe. It was...
why did he fumigate the place?
I don't know who did it and if it was a prank or not. And then there were accusations. We all went out onto the snow surface and accusations were thrown around and they were blaming this young guy... who was quite a cocky guy from Potch University, Bernie Bowers, and there was a fist thrown there. And we couldn't go back into the base till the gas had subsided.
And it's not like it's the most fantastically ventilated place.
No, you can't ventilate it. You have to wait. So we were out there a long time, but Rosewell was ready. He had his diary, and he had his chocolates with him.
Oh, good, good, good. Wow, that's...
Yeah, yeah no.
And on the other places, were there any similar incidents?
Well, there was nearly a fight in our... tensions erupt, and these guys wanted to fly at each other, and I spent nearly about 3 hours with these guys trying to... calm them down and to tell them to act responsibly and to do a job, and you're not going to gain anything if you give the first fist blow.
Mm.
And
where was this?
On Marin, in the living quarters, and these guys just wouldn't. They just wanted to fly into each other, and I was trying to. Calm the situation, but it's difficult, especially when you get these guys from Public Works Department, and they might have a short fuse. Yeah.
Tell me a bit about why were the Public Works guys there? Were
they were to maintain the base. Yeah.
Okay, so they didn't have a presence there during the year.
No, it was during the takeover.
Okay, so it would have been a stressful situation anyway, and then having these men with short fuses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, it was quite bad, and I don't know. I probably captured it on my the Patriot Day diary.
Can you at all remember who the most the responsible people were? You said Dirk van Schalkwyk was the head.
This was our general section. Dirk was there. O'Brien, Trompy O'Brien was it? And Gustav Nell and Van Rensburg, he was in charge.
Okay.
That's just the general section. That's who we used to work through when I was done.
Midwinter. What did you do for midwinter?
We streaked.
Did you? Where? On the ice? On the,
on the ice. Oh. We 100 meter streak.
Who won?
No, we didn't. Four of us.
Oh, okay.
And, from, gosh. Where you come out of the ice, Skach.
Yes, no, yeah.
No. Where it was end ones, we sprinted.
Oh, so you sprinted the length of the base.
Yeah.
Obviously, because it being under ice. Okay.
Yeah. And then we dressed up for a great dinner. We jackets and ties. And
sort of a formal dinner.
Yeah, it was a formal dinner. Fantastic spread.
Okay. And on the islands?
Islands, we didn't celebrate so much midwinter on Gough, but at Marion we did. Gough was more around Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah, because we arrived in October and we were collected in October. So Christmas was quite a big thing for us on Gough. But, I've actually got all the greetings from throughout the Antarctic. Which they sent to you, all of midwinter greetings.
Okay, fantastic. So what sort of kind of interaction did you have with the international bases on Sinai?
We used to contact the Russians by Morse.
Did you play chess with them?
Some of the guys did, yeah. And McMurdo Sound, I think we communicated with, and Halley Bay, the English base on the Antarctic Peninsula.
Yeah, and while you were on the islands, did you have any interaction with any other bases around?
No, we were on ham radio. ZD9 Golf Charlie was our call sign, and we spoke to people all over the world.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Mike, he was the radio technician, and him and myself used to enjoy it.
I can well imagine, What, describe the means of communication with South Africa specifically.
What?
The communication with South Africa specifically. You said you had Morse code and the ham radio.
Okay.
Telexes as well?
Official communication was by telex.
Mm-hmm.
There were about 3 schedules per day. Via Olifantsfontein and Daardepoort near Pretoria, and we used to send all that information, and we could have 150 words a day and receive 150 words private. That was a week, I think. We used to break that. And then we had telephone calls once a month of about 10 minutes. Other than that, there was very little. It wasn't the day of cell phones and satellite communication. It was very basic, and it was more of a frustration to phone somebody because it was delayed talk, and sometimes the comms weren't good, so it was really difficult.
And were the people listening in as well? Would have been, maybe.
Really your colleagues. You don't worry about that. You're in a little, in the... what's his name? Had
comms.
Radio.
Yeah.
Radio.
Radio comms. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. During your time there, did you have any visits from any ships or helicopters?
Yeah, we had an angel come and visit us. No, the British Navy came and they dropped a padre by from the helicopter and he landed on our roof.
Was this on Gough?
Because they patrol the islands for crayfish poachers, and they brought a whole lot of nice things for us, and Playboy magazines, and so it was a nice visit. And then we also had crayfish, Julian Gaggins and the Tristania. They were like crayfish trawlers and factory ships. They came round to golf quite a bit, and so we could also get parcels and letters through them because they come from Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
And on Marion we had Protea came down to bring the helicopter to drop cats off.
Okay.
And we went and had lunch.
Which cats?
The cats which were injected with cat
Yes. Okay, got it. Sorry, you said
yeah, and then we had lunch with the captain. He took all the senior staff over to the Protea, and we had lunch with the captain the day after my birthday.
Great.
So I had to quickly stabilize.
Recover,
yeah.
How did you get from the ship to the bases? Did you, Gough Island, did you use a helicopter?
No. No, on Gough we used a pontoon. It's a big blown up thing. You all sit on the pontoon and then it goes under a crane and the crane lifts you up in a net and you get dropped onto the sort of landing part.
Oh, okay. And on Sanaa, how did you get to the base?
Sanaa, we went with, the ship parks along next to Bukta and then you, they put a thing onto the ice and you climb on and you walk far away to the sort of stable ice and then you go with a caterpillar
cat train.
Yeah.
And Marion?
Marion, you also went from a on Marion you went off on to Boulder Beach. They dropped you at there's like a
so that they still have that rising catwalk.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, these days they use the helicopters.
Okay.
Are there any incidents specifically that you recall with fondness that happened at any of these places? Any incidents of interest or the sort of pleasant experiences specifically?
Well, a lot of pleasant were walking and exploring the islands, finding caves, going to old bases, you know, I love challenges. But I had two unfortunate incidents on Gough Island when I burnt my arm with a primer stove. The whole arm was badly, all the skin came off.
Oh.
And I walked around the base for about 30 times in the pain, trying to, the painkillers wouldn't work and the medic helped and he put a plastic skin on and after 3 weeks it healed and so that was a very nasty incident right down to my fingers it was all off and
the other one
was we were playing tenakoids in the quad of Gough Base. We made this tenakoid out of wire and bandage around it, you know, it's these ring things.
Mm.
And I badly twisted my ankle on playing on uneven ground. That put me out for quite a long time because I could only walk on the flat surface. And so it restricted me a lot from doing anything. But other than that, on the Antarctic, I had two memorable times were going into the field, into the mountains, with a cat train and taking supplies for the geological and survey team in the Grunehogna. Because I went for 6 weeks and then I think it was 3 or 4 weeks.
How long did they stay there?
They stay there for the year. They leave the base normally in about February, and then they overwinter in Grunehogna, and then they come back before the ship comes.
Wow, so they didn't really partake in base life
at all? No.
How many did you
there? Were eight of them who were in that team. And we went in, and we went right up to Pyramiden, and also had a bit of a holiday, as well as stocking their supplies. And that was also a great trip. And I experienced then also a huge snowstorm we had to stay in our tents for a couple of days and not get out and not know how the guy in the next tent was, whereas our leader was in the next tent and the tent collapsed with a snowstorm and the snow on top of him. So, you know, you've got to stay in that tent without going anywhere. You can't go to the loo. You've only got your food in your tent. And he lived on chocolate for that period. And we, Chris Lambrecht, I don't know if he's still at Pringle Bay. He was a mechanic. And we had our food and we could deal with our normal situations inside the tent. That was also quite an experience because it was minus 30 odd degrees outside, and I wrote my diary in the tent. I had to heat my ballpoint up to be able to write the diary, and I kept that with me all the time. And yeah, it was very unusual and great experience.
Fantastic, yeah. What did you eat?
Well, at our cookery course, they wanted us to sort of have a good routine and fresh food at regular intervals and not just tinned food. We took a lot of meat down, and we had different cookery sort of routines at the different places. And we did have meat on a regular basis, and you know, there was no fresh vegetables or potatoes or anything like that. It was all smash or rice and tinned vegetables or dehydrated vegetables, which you could then cook up. But, yeah, you were very restricted in what you could cook there. It was generally just out of tins.
Okay.
Potatoes were in tins. Everything in tins or dehydrated.
How did the cooking routines differ?
Oh, I can't remember. I know that. I think on the island you did a week at a time.
Okay. Oh, so it was just that kind.
And at the Antarctic, I think it was a daily changeover.
Oh, okay.
And I had the experience of making bread on Gough Island and got down to a fine art. And I did all the bread baking on, a lot of bread baking on the Antarctic, and then all the bread baking on Marion Island. So I was very easy with cooking. I still do a lot of cooking. But it was very easy time for the doctor. He was very bored, so he looked for customers to do anything with, and you might see in that booklet if you can interpret it the right way. I'm not going to go into details. Nobody got badly injured or nobody died while we were at the Antarctic, because there have been deaths in wind scoops and that.
Yeah.
Nobody had any dangerous illnesses or appendicitis like there have been in previous teams.
While you were away, did anything of significance happen in South Africa that you would have, that you heard of afterwards?
We missed the miniskirt.
Oh, really?
No. You normally have girlfriends or you have a wife or a fiance when you go down. When I went down to Gough, I had no fixed girlfriend. I had friends, Jenny and her sister were good friends. Then this friend of her brother's wanted to communicate with me. She actually phoned me when we were on the ship through Cape Radio and wanted to have a relationship.
A long-distance one.
So when I'm on Gough Island, she suddenly breaks us up, this sort of so-called relationship, because she's got engaged to another guy when I was down there. And so that was a bit hard to take, because suddenly she's there and then she's not. But otherwise, other than that, I learned from that experience to have lots of girlfriends before I went down to the next one. And you might have one left in the end, or two left, because it's nice to have somebody you can communicate with.
Of course.
You know, that's quite a situation on these islands. If you've got no letters coming in, you do feel it. You need communication from South Africa. And this one guy, he actually stays in Durbanville, Jasper Hoorn. He had this situation. He didn't get much post at all. And the ship came and he didn't get the post. And it wasn't so nice. But I had plenty of friends when I went to the Antarctic.
And Marion.
And Marion, yeah. And also, I don't know if you've heard of Jubo Malhaba.
Mm-hmm. Jubo, yes.
She had Farron de Vareld. And I actually got all the messages that I received. I still got on the cassette tape.
Oh, really?
One used to value that program, I think it was on Sundays, to 12 o'clock or 12:30. Farron de Vareld.
Yeah.
And she used to have that show. And there used to be other girls who took over when she was on leave. And actually, through that show, I got to know Sonia Harold.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And we became friends. And, she stayed at our place in Middelburg and Sutterheim. It's just things that happen, you know, because of the situation you're in.
Yes, of course. So, Fanny Vile basically entailed that they would send messages to the radio station and they'd play it and you would hear it in the Antarctic and on the islands.
Yeah.
What was the most difficult thing about the years spent there? And for each individual place?
I don't know. I had solutions to everything. I generally, I didn't really have any problems except this one situation with the girlfriend and suddenly deciding she's going to get engaged to this other guy. And then when I got back, she changed over to Jehovah, or was it the Seventh-day Adventist?
Oh.
And that was that. You're not the Seventh-day Adventist.
No.
Okay.
Please describe Gough Island.
Well, it's about 8 kilos long and 3-4 kilos wide. It is very mountainous and very luscious.
Mm.
It has beautiful vegetation and beautiful sceneries, island trees, greenery, lots of greenery and ferns all over the place. But Gough Island at 1,500 foot relates to Marion on sea level. That's what I related between Gough and Marion. The difference, one is south of the intertropical convergence and one is higher than the intertropical.
Yeah.
And that is why Gough, the albatross breed are up on top and Marion, the albatross breed on the coast.
Okay.
And that is really amazing. Island Gough, but very hard walking, very difficult to walk on.
Okay. And Antarctica?
Oh, that was just amazing. You know, I can always picture myself with Chris Lombrecht walking across the ice from the Skuurgebied, that's the continent and the ice shelf meet.
Yes.
Krylon, it was the place. And we're walking there with rope tied between us with a stick and hearing a battlefield underneath us. It's crevasses opening and closing. It was the most amazing feeling I've ever felt. It was really something else. Walking across, because the caterpillar was far behind, so you didn't hear the caterpillar. And you were just walking on your own in the sort of desert.
Okay.
It's really...
You didn't use the dogs to go inland to go visit the geologists?
No. The dogs might have gone along as pets. I think Sastrugi, that was the doctor's dog, went along.
Okay.
And, he just went along for a ride.
Right. And describe Marion.
Marion is a very barren. It's grey and black lava, grass, and dead grass. It is very barren and boggy compared to Gough Island. The only thing that keeps one's interest in Marion is the different bird life, the elephant, sea elephant, which we didn't have on Gough, we only had the fur seal, and then the different other birds, because we didn't have that white one, what's that there? Paddy, yeah.
Okay.
We didn't have the paddy, we had squirrels on Gough and the seagulls. If I went to all three again, I would have started in Marion. And then maybe done Gough and then done the Antarctic, because the Antarctic is something else. You know, going into the mountains, it is really a different world.
Did you, while you're walking around Marion Island, ever encounter any sealers' artifacts or anything they might have left there?
Well, you've got the pots.
Yeah.
That's all.
Okay,
that's
you
all
didn't
I
see
saw.
Anything else.
No.
Okay. Now you're on your way back. So can you describe the last couple of weeks on the basis, knowing that you're on your way back to South Africa?
What are you going to do first? Well, you've had communication with your parents and your friends, and you try and plan something. Well, I actually proposed to Jenny when I was on Marion Island.
Oh.
So, and we got back and we got engaged.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. We all lived happily ever after.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, but you actually look forward to what you going to do when you get back, because I didn't like Pretoria at all. That's why I went to the islands, and then when I finished the islands I went and did my studies in Pretoria, because I just didn't like Pretoria and the short back and sides people, and I had longish hair all the time since I left school, so
So, did you also have, you were talking earlier about the experiences of when you arrive as a new team and you sort of get some animosity from the old team. Did you then also in turn have animosity towards the new team coming in when you were now?
Well, it was funny because on the Antarctic, in the new team was my friend who was with me on Gough.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we got on well. I don't know. I didn't really have any problems. There was just some problems with the general section people because of the problems that had been brought about by the general section on the leader, and certain things happened during takeover period which they wanted to nail me for. So, but we sorted that out afterwards.
And the way back was also on the RSA.
Yeah.
Did you do anything specific on the return journey you can recall, or was it just more of the same?
We had a beard competition when we left.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
all three places?
No, only when we came back from the Antarctic.
Okay.
And it was nice to go in close to Bouvet, and we could see the island, and it's like an ice cap on top of the island. It's like a cake with this icing on top, and just look forward to getting back, because from the Antarctic, I had time at home with a husky, and
did you bring a husky back?
Yeah, that's a little husky I brought back. A bit of time at home, because I've just been about 2 years away from South Africa, And then I also bought some property and went up to Alexander Bay on sort of relief up to Alex Bay with my long hair and and I was super fit in those days.
Yeah, I can well imagine.
Yeah, it was amazing. And these people from Alexander Bay, they saw the Donnerse Mal Engelsman and
long hair.
And I used to run out to the weather station, office, and play
table tennis.
No, meatball.
Squash. Yeah.
I could play for about 2 hours. I would never get tired. I was so fit, and these people didn't understand this guy.
Yeah.
And then I came back, and then I went on training to go to Marin Island.
When you got back, how was South Africa different in any way? What can you recall? Anything that specifically had changed that you'd noticed?
The only thing I noticed was I got a bit claustrophobic in some traveling in some streets which were, lots of trees on the sides. I was used to open space. And,
yes.
That got me a bit. But, it was getting used to traffic. And, it wasn't like we are today. It was 70s. it was getting used to lots of other people and women. And I soon clicked in. It's just a matter of clicking into back to when you left.
Yeah. Describe your arrival at the harbour. Did you arrive at Cape Town Harbour all three times?
Yeah.
What was it like arriving back? Sort of bands and music and family.
Well, our family was there every time. From the Antarctic, the parents were there, and I'm not sure which girlfriend was there. And for Marion, Jenny was at the harbour with my folks and my brother, and my aunt always came along. But yeah, it was great. I'm not so emotional with things like that. Mm-hmm. I'm back.
Yes, now back to doing something else.
Yeah, it's just fitting into a way of life.
Mm. What do you miss about the islands and Antarctica, if you miss anything at all?
The difference. You live in a different world. You do things differently. You're not controlled by time and routines so much. You do things when you want to. But it's really different. You do have your routine of cooking and that type of thing, but you don't live in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
It's in another type of world where you do your own destiny type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to explain. You're not responsible to anybody.
Yes.
You are responsible for your work, but you live your life the way you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you put in is what you get out.
Yes. What sort of questions... Now, when people hear you've been to these places, what sort of questions do they ask you?
Did you enjoy it? How many people were there?
Do people have sort of misconceptions about the islands and Antarctica?
Well, I normally tell them before they ask the questions. Because I sort of bubble with it's an experience which you really enjoy to share with other people.
Mm.
Because I got a lot out of it, and I'm not sorry for anything I did in the experience. And it's how the situation was why I did a certain thing. I'm actually giving a talk up at the Funke House in April next year. My mother-in-law has asked me to give a talk to the ladies, so I'll be sharing slides and talking about it. So, I normally take over. I don't let them ask questions. I just tell them about it. Because I've got lots to share, and it's nice to share it. Because a lot of people don't get the experience, or the chance to have this experience.
Why do you think South Africa has the bases there?
Well, the Antarctic was strategic, and they wanted to be involved with the science of the Antarctic, and it's at a very good place for intercepting a lot of information from the sun through the geomagnetic lines. You get a lot of aurora, whistlers, micropulsations, and cosmic radiation. They all come in at the poles, and they're better monitored there. And that's why South Africa's got numerous universities who've got their projects at these bases. For the weather observations, I think it is helping now because we're such a small world. For forecasting flights and travelling around the Antarctic. But Gough and Marion were put there for filling in the synoptic chart of South Africa. And Gough is a good warning side for frontal systems coming to South Africa. Whereas Marion's got the when the fronts leave South Africa. But it all fits into the global weather pattern system.
So would you think that that is one of the benefits of having the bases there?
A huge benefit is the weather systems, but the Antarctic, it's more on scientific grounds.
What do you think of tourism in these places? Do you think it's a good idea? It should happen, or do you think it should remain closed?
Yeah, that if the tourists had to go onto these islands, they would damage it a lot. It would really be affected. And as much as I would like other people to experience what I experienced, I would rather have them see slideshows or see these things, because it's a very sensitive environment for a lot of these plants and bird species and animals. That I don't think tourism would be good on Marion and Gough. The Antarctic, I don't think it would be as bad effect what is there so much, because there is very little animal and bird life. And they wouldn't want to stay down there very long. They would only go in the summer when there's sunshine. But they do go to some areas of the Antarctic, but the islands are too sensitive for tourism, unless they were kept at the base and, a special facility at the base on catwalks.
Quarantine.
They wouldn't be allowed out unless they were flown around the island. But even that would, helicopters would affect bird life.
It does.
Because somebody was doing it. UCT student. She's doing a PhD on effects of helicopters on is it the albatross? Because I was at my daughter's graduation and there was this girl who did this.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it can affect the very sensitive situation on the island.
Why did you decide to go to all three?
Because I had been to one, I wanted to go to another one, and I wanted to do all three. It wasn't to break any record, it was just that I loved adventure.
Why did you prefer Gough? Am I right in saying that you preferred Gough from the three?
No, I prefer Gough to Marion,
mm-hmm.
because it was far more beautiful, and... Yeah, the walking was also far more of a challenge than Marion.
Okay.
And, the Antarctic was completely different. It was a unique island place where you can walk for... We went 10 kilos out on a dog sledge and you see nothing and you turn around and come back. Mm-hmm. And you can go in your shorts and a short-sleeved shirt and... you can run, and you just keep on running. and turn the dogs and come back, and then you run into a wind, and then you feel the cold. It's so different. It's like a desert, but it's a cold desert.
Great. Thank you very much. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about your experiences there?
Not really. But anybody who has the chance must go if they enjoy nature. Mm. It's a wonderful experience for anybody. And people, if you let it slip, don't worry about studies, don't worry about women or men. We were only men in our days, and only whites, which has changed a lot since. But you've got to put those things behind you. I didn't waste four and a half, 5 years. I actually gained so much experience. And you can't swap that experience for anything else.
Great. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.